Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wecker Drive. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for making us part of your day. This is Anna DeVlantis. A lot to come on the show today. Much coming up here in studio right now. The prosecutor, the guy who... Prosecutor Rob Blagojevich in the impeachment trial. He is a great person to have in studio with us today, Justice David Ellis. And I know what you're thinking. I'm thinking, how'd you get him? Right? He's kind of a big deal. So another big deal is also with us, prominent attorney, Loyola Law Professor Laura Caldwell. So I'm going to ask you both to weigh in just a couple minutes here. As House Democrats submit those two articles of impeachment, no doubt about it, the country divided politically on this. We're going to talk legally. What's next? And are there any things in common with what happened here in Illinois? What, 10 years ago now? 10 years ago, right, David? Yeah. All right. Also on the show, it's Tech Tuesday. You may not even realize how artificial intelligence is already impacting your life, from your smart speaker anticipating your needs and telling you what to buy and stuff like that, to your phone. Has this ever happened to you? Just completing your sentences for you. You're about to type in a word, and it kind of knows what word you're going for, and that always freaks me out. Well, this is artificial intelligence. And our tech experts are going to tell us more about that in the future. Also, ABC's WGN, also, we share him, Ryan Burrow. He joins us with the word of the year. What do you think the word of the year is? He'll join us and talk more about that. But we want to turn our attention right now to our in-studio guests, First District Appellate Court Justice Judge David Ellis, the man who led the prosecution of Blagojevich and his impeachment, and also prominent attorney, official lawyer of the Anna DeVlantis Show, law professor at Loyola, and author. Both of you are authors, too. I hope we get some time to talk about that as well. But thanks to you both for being here. Just initial reactions. A lot to get to here, but initial reactions to these two articles of impeachment. Judge, let's talk to you first. What do you think about what has happened? We're having some difficulty hearing him here. I think I have this mic up here. We got you, Judge? Start again. I apologize for that. We're good.
You know, Anna, it brings to mind Blagojevich to some extent. I mean, one of the things President Trump is charged with is trading official acts, or trying to trade official acts, for personal political benefit. And, of course, Governor Blagojevich was accused of doing many different versions of that very thing after he was arrested. And, by the way, he was arrested. We celebrated the 11th anniversary, I think, just yesterday on December 9th.
Got it.
December 9th, 2008 was when he was taken into custody, and the whole state kind of shook. The second ground of impeachment is obstruction of Congress. It's a really interesting one, and if you're a legal geek like I am, it's quite interesting because, you know, they're accusing him of not giving documents over to Congress. And to some extent, they said he just did a sweeping, I'm not doing anything. But to some extent, he also pleaded some executive privilege, which some people think he has the right to do, and that he shouldn't be impeached for it. So it's a little more controversial in terms of the law.
So 10 years ago, it happened with Rob Blagojevich. Yeah. And I think it was a slightly different situation because you did have a situation where there were federal charges coming down. And in this case, you don't have that criminal aspect in place. Does that make a big difference to you?
It does. To a lot of people, including some of the law professors who testified the other day before Congress, some of them think that you really should have a criminal predicate, even though you don't have to only have a crime. A lot of people think that if you have only non-criminal acts, you should be very loath to impeach. One of the things that was interesting about Blagojevich, though, is while we did have criminal charges, we didn't have the evidence, because the U.S. attorney was long away from trying this case or even turning over information to the defense, Blagojevich's team. And so one of our challenges is we tried this impeachment without getting hardly any evidence from the U.S. attorney. I spent many hours in Patrick Fitzgerald's office begging him to turn over information. And he tried, and he gave me a few tapes after we had to jump through every hurdle possible. But a lot of what we were doing was impeaching him on a document that was like a 88-paragraph criminal complaint that quoted all those, remember all those beautiful quotes like, I've got this effing thing and it's effing golden.
Right. Who can forget that?
Nobody can forget it. But a lot of what we were doing was just impeaching him on his own words as described in the criminal complaint. Mm-hmm. Some people think he could have made a lot of hay with that if he had come forward and fought the charges. But as you may recall,
he did not appear and he did not participate in those, in that he didn't testify, as I recall.
That's
a closing argument.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, during the impeachment part, he sent his lawyers. He had some of these big lawyers, right? He had Eddie Jensen and Sam Adams Jr., mm-hmm. lawyers we all know. But when we got to the, after the impeachment, to the Senate trial, when I was the House prosecutor, it was a complete boycott. And that's another thing that's very reminiscent of what Donald Trump is doing. They seem to be taking a page from the same playbook, which is to say, rather than dignify the process, I'm just going to say this thing is a sham, and I'm going to walk away.
But I think the difference would be in the Blagojevich case, you kind of knew that you were going to get some, you were going to get the conviction from the Senate side of things. And in this case, I don't think that that's at all guaranteed. In fact, it seems fairly unlikely.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Anna. I did not feel that way when I was there.
Really?
I had no idea how it was going to go.
Huh.
There was... There are factions within the Senate. First of all, the House and the Senate was not getting along back then. Speaker Madigan was the, of course, ran the House. The Senate was not run by John Cullerton until the week before the trial began.
Mm-hmm.
Senate President Emil Jones had just retired.
Mm-hmm.
And Emil Jones and Mike Madigan were not friends. In fact, Emil Jones was thought to be, if you recall, an ally of Rod Blagojevich.
Mm-hmm.
And so there had been a lot of bad blood between the houses. I was a little nervous as somebody who clearly came from the House of Representatives. I was
mm-hmm.
Madigan's lawyer, walking over into the Senate, wondering what kind of reception I was going to get. We were never entirely sure how this was going to turn
that
out.
That is so fascinating. I did not know that. Judge David Ellis is our guest, also attorney Laura Caldwell. We're going to be back. We want to talk next steps, what people can expect, what now, and much more here on WGN Radio. Stay with us. Back here in the Skyline Studios with Judge David Ellis and attorney Laura Caldwell, I think a number of people are sort of thinking, you know, this is, there are politics to this, no question. I think that's fair to say. And I think that if you look at the polls, not only is Congress divided along party lines, but the nation is divided on this issue of whether or not this is warranting impeachment or whether or not this is a total abuse of power. People seem to fall into different, very different camps on this. Would you say that when you look at the two charges that were brought forward in this impeachment from a legal perspective, I think it's interesting to see, to understand the why these two articles, the obstruction of Congress and the abuse of power. How is that decision made? What goes through their minds here legally? I know there's a political answer to that, but there's also a legal answer to that.
Well, there is always a political answer when you're talking about impeachment. And, you know, when we impeached Blagojevich, we had the same thing. We had all these different crimes he was charged with and some of these civil things he was charged with, like separation of powers issues and going around the legislature to do things. What we did in Illinois, when our impeachment is, we charged him with one article of impeachment, and we called it a pattern of abuse, and we put everything in one. And our reasoning there was that if the point of impeachment is to protect the public from a rogue official, you should be judging that rogue official by everything he or she has done, not separating them into isolated parts. We thought that made sense, and that's how we did it. But here they... you know, I was surprised that they went with obstruction of Congress. I mentioned it a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The Ukraine thing is what it is. And you're right. Some people don't think it's a big enough deal. Some people do. It probably has a lot to do with their political feelings about the president. But the obstruction thing was interesting. I think that that's where sometimes you get a little bit a different kind of political, not the partisan political, but the institutionalists. And I've seen those when I was in the House, people who really care about the legislature. And they say, we're not going to let the executive branch defy us. And so we're going to stand up for ourselves. I think there's a lot of that going on with that part, with that second article of impeachment.
Bribery was a word we kept hearing in the weeks leading up to this, but there is no bribery charge.
Right. And the, you know, that got a lot of talk as well, and Judge and I got talking about it earlier. If there's not a crime like bribery, that would be a crime on the streets, as one of the law professors, oh my gosh, that was such a law geek day, wasn't it? I kept running back to the TV like, oh my god, so
which day? The day when
they had prosecutors on and then law professors, these four law professors who, it was a great day for law professors. We all wanted to be there, and they were all very learned and really shared, and I thought, great explanations. And that is one thing I do think fairly well that's been done is the background on Ukraine, the education about the historical situation with Russia, you know, the education about what we were doing and why we were interested. And even with some of those history professors who went back to, you know, World War II and took us forward. It was very educational, I will say that. But again, that's not what everybody was necessarily looking for.
And does it make sense to just simplify the case? Is that part of this too? Just to say, here are the two that we can communicate to the public? I mean, ultimately, is there a piece of this where you really want to convince more people, right? You want to convince, if it's possible, I don't know that it is, Republicans in the Senate. You're trying to convince the public, I suppose, is a piece of this too.
And if they,
and to keep it simple.
Right. And if they had done it the way that Judge Ellis and they did at the time, which was to sort of, almost sounds like everything but the kitchen sink. First of all, that would have taken a lot of time. And I think people would have screamed and cried until more was, you know, picked out of there. Which you did have to remove eventually.
Well,
the big
headline with Blagojevich always was, and I remember being in the news business at the time, where it was the Senate seat, the selling of the Senate seat, and yet those charges were largely tossed out later due to a technicality. Isn't that right?
Part of it was the part where he was trying to trade a Senate seat to get an appointment to the cabinet. The federal court here in Chicago ruled that that's just political bartering. So one part of that count, but the rest of it, where he was trying to maybe get a campaign contribution from Jesse Jackson or get appointed to a 501c4 charity after he left the governorship, that stuff stayed in.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you're right. I mean, the criminal stuff was always the meat and potatoes of this thing.
Driver, would you say, in that case? The driver of deciding to proceed with impeachment?
Absolutely. I mean, look, Anna, you were around back then.
I was.
I mean, there was no love lost between Speaker Madigan and Governor Blagojevich.
Oh, gosh, no.
You know, just by way of comparison, in the year or two that I was there with the Speaker and Blagojevich, I think I sat in the same room with him three times.
Hmm.
Then Governor Quinn took over. I was with him every week. I mean, mm-hmm. speakers meet with governors all the time, but this speaker and this governor would not sit in the same room together. Mm-hmm. So there were there was a lot of loose talk about impeachment, and part of it was people didn't want to cheapen it. Part of it was, with the Senate president being who it was before Cullerton, we thought even if we sent it over, it wouldn't go anywhere. When he got arrested, everything changed. December 9th, 2008, everything changed, and we knew it immediately.
One of the big complaints you hear from Republicans today is, why not slow the process down and gain some GOP support? Is that fair to say that, or is that not going to happen anyway? What's your read on that?
I think it's absolute. Just strategy and having not much to argue. They don't have much to argue by way of, does X mean Y? They just keep sort of pointing to, well, you said you weren't going to take a long time. You would take a long time. You said you'd really think about this. And you said you'd do that, and you said you'd do that. And really, they're not arguing the facts. They're just arguing sort of behavior.
They think it's not an impeachable offense.
They argue
so they're
process,
just...
and they argue that. That's not an impeachable offense.
Next steps. I think this is what everyone says. Okay, the president is now, he's not going to be removed from office. He's not leaving office. There's a House floor vote, right, that we move to that next. And then it's likely, it seems a foregone conclusion that it will meet the House will vote to impeach. But then there's a Senate trial. And I have heard some legal experts, and I want to get you guys to weigh in, say that it's possible there won't be a Senate trial. Could there be a motion to dismiss, and then there would be no Senate trial, which would start, I guess, in the new year after Christmas holidays? What do you think about that?
Well, the United States Supreme Court has said the Senate can do absolutely whatever it wants.
Oh.
There was a case called U.S. versus Nixon, and it's not the Nixon you're thinking of. There was a Judge Nixon who was impeached, and that went to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and they held a nice little hearing in there. It would probably look a little bit like a trial with people testifying. The committee referred out an article of impeachment against the judge, and then went to the full floor of the Senate, and they just voted on the resolution. And Judge Nixon went up to the highest court, ultimately, the Supreme Court, and said, I didn't get my trial. That's not a trial. And the Supreme Court said, a trial is whatever the Senate says it is.
Huh.
This impeachment is not in the judicial article. It's in the legislative article for a reason. It's their game, and we will not tell them what to do. Will Mitch McConnell relegate this to a committee hearing? He could.
I guess no one knows.
Nobody knows, and he could.
So we'll have to wait and see about that. Now, very quickly, I know you're both authors as well. What book can you promote? Because they're great holiday gifts. I've read a lot of your books. David, Judge Ellis, I'm going to start reading yours because I've just learned about them.
He's got some great stuff, too. The book I ask people to check out is Anatomy of Innocence, Testimonies of the Wrongfully Convicted. And it is best-selling authors like Lee Child and Scott Turow. Writing with exonerees to tell a part of their story of getting wrongfully arrested and wrongfully convicted and eventually released. And it goes toward helping get records expunged of people who that's helped.
Judge, what's your latest?
And I want to, I'll use my time to talk about Laura's book, because that book is incredible, and I worked on
and
it.
And you were on
too.
It, yep.
And these are real stories of people who were innocent, who spent time in prison, and novelists who used to write this stuff as fiction have turned it into
right.
you know, true crime, and it's wonderful. I'm lucky to be writing books these days with James Patterson. So I guess the book we have out now is called Unsolved.
Mm-hmm.
It's the second book in a series of an FBI, basically a profiler and a data analyst who ends up, you know, catching serial killers.
Well, you're both special people and with great talent, and I appreciate you both weighing in today, Judge
Love
David Ellis.
Good to see you, Anna.
And Laura.
Love the show.
Well, thank you very much. We're back with more here on WGN in a moment. Our guest right here, stepping into the studio, Robert Ficori of the Ficori Law Group. We also have with us John Schwarzinski of Hale & Monaco.
I commend you on
Thank
that
you.
Pronunciation.
Thank you. With a name like Devlantis, I'd like to get these right. And then also here with us, Liz Capra. Now, this is a story that will come back to you as we talk about it. It was in the headlines recently involving a bar on Hubbard Street and a horrible situation that happened there with a young woman who was dragged into an alleyway. It was caught on video. She was assaulted after spending some time at a bar. And the allegation here was that a drug was slipped into her drink. And I know that you both gave, or you were at the news conference, both of you attorneys, and were trying to speak out to say, hey, has this happened to anyone else? You were trying to put out the word of this horrible incident and just try to understand if there were more people out there.
I mean, we not only found, and John will speak to this as well, we not only got, you know, numerous accounts of a similar circumstance happening to other individuals and patrons of this establishment that may not have led to a cause of action. But I know specifically on Liz's behalf, after reviewing that video.
Liz Capra is also here in studio. We're going to talk
Hello.
To you in just a minute. Sorry, Liz. I don't mean
no
to leave
problem.
You out, but I want to get to your story in a minute. I just want to get the background first.
Yeah, so you know, after we filed our Jane Doe cause of action, and just so everybody knows, what a Jane Doe proceeding is it protects the identity of our victim. Most people don't know, but our victim is only a 22-year-old girl from Texas, and we are protecting her identity.
Because she doesn't want to come out and be public with the situation.
Understandably so. I, you know, we can't fathom. I know Liz can, unfortunately, but we can't fathom what she went through. But we are respecting her wishes and respecting her privacy. We also commend Liz for being so courageous to speak out publicly. I'll let Liz speak to this, but I know after a review of that video, and that video is alarming, right? I mean, the video doesn't just tell us a sexual assault occurred. It tells us that employees of this bar were 50 feet to 100 feet away watching as this sexual assault took place for over 16 minutes and did nothing. It wasn't until our client passed out in the alleyway that El Jefe did anything. And they did call an ambulance, is what our understanding is. But they failed to do anything before that, which would have prevented that
sexual
assault.
So police were called. She was found unconscious. A horrible circumstance. And I know she went to get medical treatment. But then, did they find a drug in her system? Do you know what happened there?
So we are still waiting on the results of her toxicology report. As I'm sure you can understand, Illinois State Police and the crime lab takes quite a long time to bring back the results of the toxicology report.
Mine took 6 months.
Liz, let's bring you into the conversation here, because when they gave that news conference, is that when you decided to say, hey, were you somebody who came forward after or before that?
So I did report my incident when it happened right away, the very next night, day, and I did have a positive tox screen, but like I said, it took 6 months to come back, so that's not surprising at all that they don't have it yet. I actually want to take a second too. People have been giving me a lot of credit. I have gotten some negative, but mostly positive credit.
Well, it's brave to come out.
Thank you.
In your circumstances. And I understand you're coming out because you saw some other woman that this happened to, and you thought, hey, you know what? Something similar happened to me.
Right. And I have evidence that I can use to help her and everyone else. But I also wanted to take a second to commend her as well, because people are giving me a lot of credit for coming forward and showing my face. But this girl put forward her video. I mean, I honestly feel like doing what I'm doing is easier than being the person on that video, because that video is being shown everywhere over and over, obviously, because of it. It's just horrific shock value and bringing to attention what
what's been going on over at El Jefe and unfortunately other places as well.
We should mention we did reach out to El Jefe several times, this bar you just mentioned, and we didn't get it. We asked them to be on the show. We asked them to comment on it. We asked them to give us any kind of reaction at all, and we did not hear from them.
Shocking.
Also, though, the news department at the time, I think you gave this news conference several weeks back, I think did get a response that said we take any criminal behavior very seriously and we will cooperate with the authorities. Now, I don't know where we are with the police investigation, but I do want to ask you about that as well.
Well, what I can tell you, the Chicago police are doing a fantastic job investigating this. It is a very difficult case to investigate, given what has transpired and the lack of surveillance video. One thing that I'd like to point out is that Jane Doe, our first client, although we haven't received the contents of her toxicology report, we have received some of her medical records, and her medical records indicate that her blood alcohol content was only a 0.017, which is well under the legal limit.
So for her to be unconscious and act in this way where she stumbled out of the bar,
it's highly unlikely that
it came solely from the alcohol.
Yes, it's extremely highly unlikely that it came from alcohol. And the fact that there are employees at El Jefe that are going out on social media trying to victim blame and say that our client was drunk, and basically that's what happens. It's a really sad instance that, you know, their employees are out there making comments like that. And even more so is, I think it was last week, the spokesperson for El Jefe came out on Inside Edition, was asked the question, is your bar safe? And she didn't want to answer that question.
Oh, no, she answered refused, it. Tell them what she said, John.
She refused to, she said she's not going to answer that question, and then followed it up with, is it safe to cross the street?
Hmm.
I mean, if you ask me, that's not something that, if they didn't do anything wrong, they would be saying.
Unless they're treating it as an isolated incident that they don't actually know any more about this.
Well, what we know is that it's not an isolated incident.
How could you not say yes?
Yeah. It's not an isolated instance because going through our investigation and going back all the way to even before Liz came forward, 2014, and just looking at various forms of social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, there have been many people to post back 5-6 years ago that they were drugged and roofied there.
Contemporaneous with that occurrence taking place.
Basically, since they opened in 2013.
What is contemporaneous? What is that?
What I mean by that is, you know, when John is telling you that these tweets are going back 5 or 6 years ago, what we mean by that is we are seeing accounts on social media that state from the user, whoever that social handle or whatever their name is on Twitter, which we do have, stating, I was drugged at El Jefe last night, and the posting would have been, I think, John, correct me if I'm wrong, was December 2015, was 14, one of ours, or 2014. But, you know, Anna, I want to say one thing that I haven't said quite yet as it relates to your question with respect to El Jefe's statement.
Okay.
I'm extremely frustrated. And what I'm extremely frustrated by is the notion that they are committed to working alongside the Chicago Police Department in their investigation.
Or claim to be.
Here's what we do know. We do know, based on our investigation, that employees of El Jefe have gone out on social media and have specifically stated, and we have the screenshot saved just in case it does get deleted, but we have the information. And it states that allegedly on October 19th, there was a sprinkler system malfunction, which caused 900 gallons of water to be released onto the premises, which destroyed the security footage of the interior and exterior space of El Jefe.
Hmm.
Mind you, the photographic and video evidence that we have in our possession as it relates to Jane Doe is not from any surveillance cameras from El Jefe.
It's from a different bar right down the street
It's actually from a building, from security cameras that are affixed to the building adjacent to El Jefe in the alleyway of Hubbard Street.
So you're saying it's an example of them not cooperating with the whole thing. Do we know who is behind this? No one has found this person who is the suspect in the case of Jane Doe? Do we have any more of any development in terms of the police case?
I think speaking for John and I think both of us can tell you 10 out of 10 times when we have spoken to anyone in the industry as it relates to the nightclub and bar industry, and you know, I myself from personal experience can tell you, you're not getting access to the back alleyway unless you know somebody. You would be prevented the moment you stepped into the back kitchen area to try to walk through some, you know, some part of their establishment. Only employees are allowed unless you know somebody, or you would have been stopped by a number of employees.
Or an alarm system. You can't just walk out the back door
and
have a
club. So there's suspicion there. I think one of the reasons, you know, we wanted to have you come on is because I felt as if there was this conversation about this maybe being more common than you would think, in that things that you have to watch out for when you're in a bar, don't leave your drink alone. Watch it. You have to watch out for things like this. Sadly, we do have an officer who is going to weigh in on some of this and how difficult these cases really are, because you're touching on something here. We have to break here, though. We'll be right back and pick this up from where we leave off in just a minute. Back here live in the Skyline Studios, this is Anna DeVellantis. We've been talking about that incident at a Hubbard Street bar where a woman was hurt. We believe it's alleged that something was put in her drink. We're still waiting on toxicology tests. And then she was later assaulted after visiting that bar for about an hour. And again, her blood alcohol level very low. It didn't seem to be related to that, but she was in a terrible state, and then that happened. So I think we're wondering how common this is. Several people on our text line and callers have told us something similar has happened to them. So it just reminds us about the reasons and need to sort of keep track of your drinks and all those other things that are sad but real in this world. We do have Sergeant Pete checking in with us here, and I wonder if we were just talking about this. I wonder, from a police perspective, these have got to be such tough cases to follow. And if you wait too long, I'm told that often you won't even know if anything's in your system. Isn't that true, Pete? I think we have Pete on the phone. While we're waiting for Sergeant Pete, let's talk back to you guys. Have you found it when you did a toxicology test, right? And you also did, but it's taking 6 months to come back. Are you told that you can wait? Oh, here he is. We got you. Hey, Pete, tell us what you know from an investigative perspective, how these cases are for police to have to deal with.
Yeah, drug-facilitated sexual assaults, they're the most unreported crimes in the country. The levels being tested by bars or by the police departments, it's really difficult, because usually the victim is incoherent or in a daze for a couple of days, and then they go in for a test, and the most accurate way to get a test for this stuff is a urine test. But there's so many drugs out there. You can use rohitamine, you can use ketamine, you can use Xanax. There's just, I mean, if you Google them, there's a million drugs out there that people can use. And you know, when you're drugged and then you're not realizing what happened for 24, 36 hours, and these things are soluble, so when you get in there, a blood test maybe it'll give you some idea what was there, but a urine test is always the strongest test for it. And I tell my friends and their kids, if you go into a bar and you have a mixed drink, if you put that drink down and turn your back, just walk away. If you want to drink, have a bottle of beer and hold that bottle of beer in your hand the entire time. Because it's so easy to slip it in there. And realistically, women are not the only ones that get roofied. There's men that'll get roofied in a strip club, and they'll be in such a state that their credit cards are abused, and they end up running $3,000 and $4,000 bills and have no idea what happened.
So it works that way too. Sergeant.
Yeah.
Pete, thanks for weighing in on this. I appreciate it. Let's get back to you guys here. Are you, when you look at this, is there a period of time you're told that you have to check and see what's in your system if you even want to report it? I know, Liz, you said that you had not even one of the drugs that Sergeant Pete just mentioned in your system. It was totally different. How long after the incident did you go to get checked out?
It was the next morning, early morning, because my fiance at the time and both my parents, and I, like, just like he had mentioned, you're so out of it from the drug because it's so strong that you don't even know better that you should go to the hospital. You have to almost have a third party force you to go. Not that you don't want to. You don't know better. You're not here.
You're not thinking of that immediately.
You're not here with everybody else on planet Earth at that moment for several days, honestly. And coming off of the drug is also very painful. So you're very sick, you know. And I luckily was brought by my parents and
to the hospital.
Yes, to the hospital. And I was given the toxicology report and the rape kit, the whole nine yards. I did everything, which was very invasive and awful. But, you know, I was very hopeful at the time that we were going to catch the person and I was doing the right thing. And once you're there, I was so sick. The hospital was also helping me just feel better because I was so sick from coming off of what they had given me. But I was actually drugged with acetone, which...
like a nail polish? Oh, my God.
Yes, I believe it is what they use to take off nail polish. They also use it to make... help me out, John.
So what we've learned so far in our investigation is
we have a request not to give out any of these drugs because I feel as if, let's just talk about it generally,
But it comes in out of your system very, very quickly to answer your question. It is very fast.
And
so,
if you don't get the tests needed, it would be difficult.
Which is why they use that.
To prove.
Right. Because,
so what we've learned is that generally these types of date rape drugs are only in your system for about 12 hours and sometimes less depending on how your body metabolizes. But I'd also like to touch a little bit on when you mentioned about, is this something common or do we see this often?
That's the hard part to understand. Yes. You hear anecdotally, and even just right now we're hearing from several texters. 812, this also happened to me in Florida in a restaurant. I told my husband immediately, who was with me, several other people are weighing in to say, you know, hey.
So what we've learned thus far is that we know that this is common behavior, at least at El Jefe, and not only at the El Jefe location in Chicago, but also in their locations in Arizona. And what we've learned is the ownership and the managers have created a culture of encouraging sexual assault and essentially forcing some of their even female employees to perform sex acts in order to get the better hours to work. There's a pending lawsuit.
So all this will be part of the lawsuit. I don't want to get too deep into allegations because I know this is still a pending lawsuit. Yes. Nothing has been proven at this time.
And that's not something that our firm, my firm specifically, is involved in or representing. So with respect to those litigations, I know that that's pending litigation in a different state involving the defendant that, frankly, you know, as attorneys representing our clients in this case, our focus and our goal is only with respect to our clients and the allegations that we're making against the defendant. And, you know, we let our complaint speak for itself. We let the video that we have speak for itself as it relates to the defendant's egregious conduct.
Okay. So what is next? Obviously, you want to find this person who you believe committed this act, and you're working with police on that. Are there any leads or anything leading you to believe that, that's going to happen sometime soon?
We can only hope so, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no doubt in our mind that the individual that was seen staggering and, you know, nearly falling on his own face, walking our client out of this bar, we know that he is known to this establishment. I mean, it's very interesting that the El Jefe company and their PR agent who has gone all over national news and spoke about this incident says that they are willing to cooperate and work alongside the Chicago Police Department. Yet the idea of their interior security footage and their outdoor security footage being faulted as a result of a sprinkler system. I mean, we are in a different day and age, Anna.
It does seem as if it's getting sort of difficult, right? We're going to try to, again, hear from El Jefe. I want to repeat again, when we tried to call them, we did not get a response. Our news department did get the response that said they are cooperating, and we'll try to get more from them on this. I have a mother here, 773. I have a horrible feeling about all this as a mother of three girls. I hope they never experience what I have. And I guess my question to you, one of the reasons you did that news conference and you were on all the channels and everyone saw you, and you too, Liz, it was very brave of you to put a face to this.
Thank you.
Because that's not easy. I can't imagine what you went through, and you chose to come forward and be public about it.
Right.
But you were trying to, what was the purpose of that? You wanted people to come forward. And I would imagine people did, even if they weren't related to this particular restaurant. Did other people, and you don't have to mention other restaurants because that's not what we're interested in here. What we're interested in is trying to understand the scope of this. How many women have come forward when you put out the word to say, hey, did this happen to you?
You know, like I said, we have had numerous accounts of individuals that have reached out to us, either specific to El Jefe or just in the nightlife and restaurant and bar industry, that truly we feel that we're on the cusp of something much greater than what we could have envisioned in the beginning. If there is anything that we want to come out of this, is to shed light on this issue, to implement the necessary changes at this establishment, because the amount of people that have vocalized their concerns to us is actually startling.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm interested in getting the word just about this issue in general and reminding people to keep track of their drinks and know that this is a real issue that does happen. And so I want to thank you all for coming in on that
subject.
Can I say
one more thing?
Absolutely.
Answer your question?
Go ahead, Liz.
I actually personally know two people who this happened to at El Jefe, which I also did not find out about until after Jane Doe's video came out.
Mm-hmm.
One person who wants to remain anonymous for family reasons, I totally understand. And another person, the very, very first text message that I got after walking out of that very difficult and very public press conference was someone saying, another close friend of mine saying they were also drugged.
As we said,
at El Jefe.
Sergeant Pete talked about it. They're highly unreported, and yet that doesn't mean that they don't exist. I want to thank you guys. We're so out of time,
thank
but
you.
I appreciate you
no
calling
problem.
Attention
thank you so
to
much.
This important issue. John Schwarzinski, we've got Robert Ficori and Liz Capra all on this issue. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Dana. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, on the phone right now, the spokesperson for El Jefe, the establishment at the center of that lawsuit, Lissa Druss. And Lissa, thank you for calling in. We did try to reach you, and I really appreciate you getting a hold of us.
Well, it's a long time no talk. It's a good thing I listen to WGN Radio.
I am happy you do, too. Tell us your response to some of the things you just heard.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't hear everything as I was trying to get a hold of your producer, but you know, one of the most concerning things about this is the fact that it happened, an incident like this happened, and it should never happen, not only in Chicago, but anywhere. But the plaintiff's attorneys are claiming El Jefe employees did something wrong or egregious. And if that's true, and if they have facts and evidence to support that, not only do we want to know about it, we need to know about it. And more importantly, the Chicago Police Department needs to know about it, because right now we don't know who was involved and why.
Mm-hmm. I think that what they're saying is that potentially people within the establishment knew about it, but that they're not cooperating with the police. Is that not your understanding?
I cannot speak for the investigation. I cannot speak for the Chicago Police Department. I know that we are conducting our own internal investigation, but that holds nothing against the police department. And if we don't have the facts are the only thing they're going to explain what happened that night and what happened to anyone involved. There are so many people who were there that night that it's virtually impossible. But we've got to believe that if the plaintiff's attorneys and their client claims to know something about what happened that night, please bring it to the police department.
Okay, that's fair enough. Alyssa, I really appreciate you calling, defending the El Jefe restaurant and what happened there that night. We'll have to wait and see. Hopefully this police investigation is successful, and hopefully we find the person behind this assault. I think that's in everybody's best interest. So thank
and
you.
And I'm not defending. I'm asking for the truth. And if the truth is out there, we need to know it.
All right. News is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. You're live in the Skyline Studio. Okay, it's Tech Tuesday, and this is one of my favorite days, Tuesday, because I get to learn about all the things tech, and you do too. We have great guests today. Scott Catoon, he's the CEO of TechNori, host of the Startup Showcase, right here on WGN Radio. You can hear him Saturday, noon to 1, right?
We are now noon to 1.
That's when you can hear him. And then Ted Parasot of Helios Visions is an aerial data collection company here in Chicago, the first company in Chicago to be able to legally fly over real people.
Yep.
Is that true, Ted?
That's correct.
You can fly over people. You needed a special license for that.
Correctly, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, we want to start out talking about artificial intelligence, because I don't really even know what to make of all this. When I try to read the articles and keep up on this sort of thing, but one of the things I've noticed is that when I start typing emails or texts or things like that, it starts to auto-populate what I was going to say. And I actually was going to say that. So it's starting to know me, and that freaks me out a little bit, right? Or when your smart speaker starts telling you, maybe you would want this music to wake up to. I'm like, yeah, you know, I kind of do. That kind of knows me. And it's sort of evolving in this way where these machines are learning us, but they're also learning themselves.
Absolutely.
Talk about that a little bit, Ted. What can we expect here? What's happening right now? What are the applications of this already happening
sure.
in real life?
Yeah, in the drone world, we're using artificial intelligence to identify defects in buildings, identify individuals on the ground for safety purposes. We're starting to...
You mean during construction, you'll kind of keep track of what's going on the ground?
Correct, yeah. So equipment moving around, material on the site, volume of that material, doing building inspections and things like that, identifying defects in the building, being able to identify those faster and safer than putting a human out there immediately. Is definitely a big use case.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Scott, you talk about this, I know, on the Tech Showcase all the time. It just, we're hearing that the world is moving pretty fast with artificial intelligence,
yeah,
with them all machines talking to each other. And I guess driverless cars have to rely
on this
5G.
You scared everyone away last week.
I kind of did. I was scared myself, and the TVs are watching us, is what we talked about last week,
yes,
because they're actually equipped with the facial recognition, some of those.
This is ironic. After the show, I was talking to Darren from Keeper Security. And
he was great, by the way.
He was. We were walking out, and he was like, did you hear about this individual who... I was actually talking to another company called Axio, which is also in this kind of world. And they were saying that somebody hacked into a refrigerator, an IoT smart refrigerator. And then they threw the refrigerator out, and they were able to use it to get into the internet that was in their house, the network.
No way.
And then
through their refrigerator.
Then that person took the phone that was on that network into their office and hacked the office. And this was like a multi-billion dollar company that, you know, that this will be coming out in the next couple months. They're trying to clean it up right now.
Here in Chicago?
It's not in Chicago, but they have places. It's gigantic.
So I guess there are vulnerabilities with all these smart things that we got to think about.
Must pay attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ted, we have to pay attention more, apparently.
Oh,
I bet your place is totally secure. I don't even know what you guys do. Like, how do you secure your devices? Do you have a smart speaker in your house?
I do not.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. That's always interesting when the high-tech people don't have them. You have a bunch of them?
I have a bunch of them. I'm too lazy to turn up. The funny thing is you spend more time asking it than you do actually just getting up off your butt and, like, hitting it. Like,
mine does not understand me.
Because
I think I talk to her the least, and the other people, my husband and my kid, speak to her the most. And so she doesn't. She doesn't really talk to me.
My wife confirmed that I mumble with Alexa not understanding anything I say. She's like, you mumble. No, I don't. Alexa said you mumble. No question.
Alexa is very complicated right now. I'm sorry if we set her off.
It's a he/she. I think this is not. There's no sex to Alexa.
Mm-hmm.
I thought.
Can you even rename her? I thought you could do that.
You can do whatever you want.
Possibilities. All kinds of things.
Endless possibilities.
So what's the next frontier here? What are we going to notice with AI? Because I think a lot of us are sort of trying to wrap our brain. I know I am trying to wrap my brain around what we even have right now. What's happening when it's trying to collect our data and when these computers are beating humans at things, that they're machine learning kind of thing?
I think there's a two-part conversation here. And I think people are getting a little bit carried away with things that guys like Ted are going to be working on, which is like next level.
Right.
Right. Stuff that we won't, as general people population, won't probably see impacting us except for, you know, in a kind of a non-tangible way. You don't have to get totally bent out of shape over where AI is going as a normal person. I think you're either a person who expects your auto typing and autocorrect on your phone and your email, and you're like, I just expect that life kind of knows two steps ahead of where I'm going to be,
mm-hmm,
and I'm okay with it. I know how they got it. They hacked my stuff or whatever, I know, but I expect it. And so I'm only concerned with like making sure it's done in a responsible manner.
Right.
And that is the only stuff that I think impacts us on a daily basis and what the general public, you know, public should be concerned about. Then there's the AI that is like transforming the way that we go to war. And the way we do things that are like absolute in the world. And that's drones and many other things, autopilot on planes and driving in cars and things. And I just think that maybe people, we're not there yet. And so it's like people freak out on, because your brain immediately goes to like the end game, right?
It does.
Instead of just being like, really, we're just talking about like automated emails. Like,
but it gets more, doesn't it become more and more, they get to know you? As they get to know you, there's a little more of that freak out factor.
Yeah, but like, you know, like, and Ted, I think you could probably attest this perfectly with the drone footage and what you know about a building and how construction should go versus how it does go. The reality is, they already have the data points.
Mm-hmm.
This is just confirming it. They know what you wrote. They know how frequently you send it. They know, you know, what if you upload images. They know all of the things. Facebook has everything. They know everything. Google knows it. Everybody knows everything about you.
Just assume that.
Yeah, it's
just
not
know
even an assumption.
That.
Know that. Yeah,
know that.
Know that. And then you've opted in. So the question is, do you want them to use it for just strictly not evil, but like not good for you?
Or would you like them to, like, sprinkle in some good things for you as well? Like,
that's the choice?
Yeah,
kind of. Sounds like a terrible choice.
Well, I mean, but, like, is it, though, if, like, if you get to communicate with, like, a grandmother or somebody who's traveling all over the world, that you couldn't do that otherwise. So, like, the trade-off is, like, certain conveniences in my life for, like, certain lapses. But I think this is the thing that got told to me, and made it okay for me. And this is not going to make it okay for everyone, but for me, it was good. A breach happens at Sony. And somebody, a friend of mine, logged in using my PlayStation and happened to have my credit card information in it. And so I was a part of Sony's breach. I did nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. And I still got
swept up into that.
Right. So, like, there's no, you know, just it is what it is.
We're back with more Tech Talk with Ted Parasot of Helios Visions and Scott Catoon, the CEO of Technori, coming up here on WGN Radio. We've been talking about AI and just how the computers seem to know so much about us. And I was telling the story off air. I'll tell the story on air. Yesterday, someone reached out to say, hey, you should try this. And they mentioned a retailer. I think you'd really like it. Well, I checked them out. And I'm like, I really don't like it. And I really haven't ever shopped there. So I just said, okay, thank you for the referral. Within hours, I started in my inbox to get coupons for that retailer. Obviously, I'd never shopped there. There's no history of me being there. Just from one email, that started to happen. And I think we all sort of start feeling this now. We see the ads pop up after talking about something, you know, Googling it once, whatever. They know a lot about us. But you said, Scott, there are ways, if you want to kind of block some of this, things we can do?
Yes, I have one follow-up question for you.
Okay.
It's a big one for the listener.
Good.
So when you got this email, did it have the said retailer.com link in the email?
Yes, it did.
And did you click on it?
I did not click on it.
Did you, at any time since you've been logged into your email, go to that.com to look at the...
I did not.
Nothing.
That's what freaked me out. I didn't go to it, but it did have the .com, the full link to the site, yes.
Yes. So let's say, hypothetical one, you did click on it, and hypothetical two, you did not. Mm-hmm. You can argue that there are multiple things that are going on with the way that the tracking inside of the actual email and database that you're saving is done, particularly when it comes back to linking. But let's assume you clicked on it. Most people don't realize that, one, if they're using their standard Safari or their browser from Chrome in particular, that it makes it extremely easy for Google to do everything all in one shot. The fact, were you on a Chrome browser by chance?
I think I was on my iPad, so no, it would have been Safari.
Yeah, so the idea here is that if you wanted to eliminate, now this doesn't fix everything, I think Ted can chime in on like how to make this even another level, mm-hmm. but the simple fix for me and what I try to avoid what exactly happened to you is I use an incognito window or a private browser. So I might use Firefox as an entirely different browser option and just entirely, and there's other options, don't use Internet Explorer, it's done. But anything else, Safari and Chrome, I don't actually trust this on Chrome, but Safari and Chrome, you can go to a private or incognito mode, which basically has you signed out and it stops tracking, or it says it stops tracking what you're clicking on, and it puts a break in the middle of their little process. Now, I still think they probably get the data, but the bottom line is that it would at least clip off a little bit of what's going on here. So for anyone out there who's like searching and doing things,
and you don't want that kind of thing. Some people like it, I suppose.
If you like it,
right?
If you like it or you just don't care, it's fine. But if you're a person who just doesn't want that kind of stuff and you want to be signed into your pages and it not be double linked, your Gmail linked to every other page you ever open, then just go into an incognito one or use a look up a specific browser type that is more secure, like Firefox.
I've also heard, and maybe Ted, you can jump on. Are there more suggestions that you have before I go on?
Yeah, you could install a VPN or use a VPN service on your cell phone as well. You can go into your settings on your iPhone or your Android and establish the VPN connection, which is basically protecting your personal information, protecting your location, and a lot of your browsing data. So it's not directly tied back to you. Mm-hmm. And so when you're putting out credit card information or personal information in general in any forms, which so many things are digitized nowadays, all your forms for signing up for just about anything is online. So, you know, a good way to kind of maintain your privacy, and so that's just not out there to the entire world, the VPN is a
Because that's
tool.
What freaked me out. Okay, if they have this one website that was in my email, but what if your banking account information is in there? Social Security, not, I mean, you just think about everything
so
that's in your email. There is a ton to protect. And we had Keeper Security, a great Chicago company on last week. They protect passwords, but they also protect data.
Yeah, so they have their Keeper Vault and they have the Keeper Chat and like different things that you could, if you wanted to make sure anytime you're going to pass along private information, you would just say, hey, I'm going to text you this way. And it would keep it out of that. I would say the other thing that to mention for anyone listening out there, in particular my father who's listening right now, if you're wondering,
hi Dad,
if you're wondering why you're getting tripped up and you're like, I didn't click on anything, I didn't do anything. If you're a person who watches sports on your phone, on YouTube TV, YouTube, Twitter, Yahoo, in order to get the sports match that you're trying to watch, it has to have your location. So you're clicking it on, or you're at least allowing it to click on by default, because that's how the cable companies know whether or not you can get this game in your market.
Right.
That trick enables location setting on your phone. So from that moment on, iPad or phone or otherwise, you are transmitting everything. And you have
in
to
terms
go
of
back
location at, when you well, say everything.
Location, but it's really everything, because you can't do it incognito because it wouldn't be able to do it. So you're the minute you say, yes, I'd like to give away my current location, you just flip the green switch on every single one of the little tabs that you need to go back and switch off if you want them to stop tracking you. And they forget that, and you're like, oh, I didn't do anything. No. You watched the Bears game on Twitter. You did do that.
Your dad watched the Bears game on Twitter?
I have no idea. He was sitting in a bar in the back room. I have no idea.
How tech savvy. I mean, yeah. And that's amazing.
My mom is the Twitter hero. She's the one that does, she's crushing it on Twitter.
I've also heard you can watch, like DuckDuckGo as a search engine is another way around it. Would you guys recommend that instead of, you can switch your settings again from Google or whatever you tend to use, to use a search engine like DuckDuckGo as your default?
That's recommended.
And that is recommended. And for you would say you like that, Ted?
Sure. Yeah. If you're,
what does it do essentially?
It's just privatizing your search history, that type of thing. So you're not, you know, really giving your information to advertisers. Really, your data is very valuable. Data in general is very valuable, and I feel like individuals haven't really understood the value of their data, and we're really starting to learn how valuable it is through businesses basically being created and ran with that in mind, more or less.
I tried DuckDuckGo, and the only issue I had with it is because it doesn't know your location. Sometimes you'll type in the name of, say, an Italian restaurant, and there'll be one in Florida, and you'll get that one first because it's more popular or bigger. So it is a little bit more difficult to navigate. So the fact that they do know things about you, you know, can be helpful.
Yeah.
That's the catch 22, right?
Turn off some of that stuff and start seeing the unpersonalized feed. So your Facebooks or other social channels or your search, you know, you're going to start getting.
It's like Facebook circa 2004.
Yeah.
Who are you people?
Yeah. It's really interesting to see the difference in a personalized feed compared to just the general feed without any of that personal information, because sometimes it's very helpful and it saves you a lot of time because it knows your sort of patterns and, you know, it can be helpful in ways, but also can be very invasive.
I'm in too deep. I'm leaving.
Well,
I'm letting the data.
You're just fine with it.
Pouring out of my windows.
Really? Yeah. I was going to ask you guys, as tech people, does it freak you out? Because it does me. It freaks me out.
Sure. It's something to be conscious of and to consider when you're putting information out there online, and just kind of being aware of where your data is going and if you can protect it, and just, you know, if it's being used, being aware where it's being used, I think is important as well.
Any final thoughts? We only have a minute here, but do you think anything else we should know if we want to protect our data, we want to do anything, or things that people maybe should be doing that we're not doing?
Listen to Ted and Anna. I think you should be aware of this and protect yourself. I just am a person who
just
risk aversion is it's just gone. But I do think the one other thing I would mention to people is as we get into the smart wallets, really need to start being more careful with like where your phone and your passwords and things are, because your entire bank account is now on your phone. That's a real thing.
That is, yeah. That is, that's the...
I mean, that's a choice. That's your choice to do that. But if you do, be careful.
All right. Scott Catoon, CEO of Technori. You can hear him on the Startup Showcase here on WGN Radio. Saturdays at noon now, new time. And Ted Parasot of Helios Visions, the drone company. Wave to his drone sometimes if you see it. So congratulations on your business success too, Ted.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate you both. We'll be back more here on WGN coming up. Back here live in the Skyline Studios with ABC News' and WGN Radio's Ryan Burrow.
Get that on a business card.
You've got a lot of jobs.
Yeah.
But we like sharing you, because ABC News takes you, and then we get to have you, too. So I like that you're here.
This is fun today. We get to talk about the word of the year, right?
Word of the year.
Well, what do you think? What direction do you think the American public goes when it comes to searching up words?
I thought it was going to go political this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at the top 10, there are words, impeach, quid pro quo. These are words that we've been hearing about. Clemency, snitty. Snitty is
snitty.
One of the words. Yeah, Attorney
What's
General.
Snitty?
Attorney General William Barr used that to reference a letter by Robert Mueller. He called it snitty. So that was a reason.
One to have in your back pocket?
Yeah. A lot of people looked that word up in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, but that is not the number one word. The number one word actually doesn't have anything to do with politics. It has to do with gender identification, and the word is a very simple one. They. T-H-E-Y.
They.
they. And the reason is it is now kind of redefined, or at least there's a new definition tagged along in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, the identification of transgender non-binary, which means that someone
that's
who
the
doesn't
pronoun they want to be described
exactly
by.
I don't want to be called a him or a her for whatever reason. I want to be referred to as a they or them. What the dictionary noticed is 313% increase in searches of the word they. And there have been a couple news stories around it. Oslo Grace, a California runway model who walks in both the men's and women's shows, apparently prefers the word they. Pop star Sam Smith wrote on social media a preference of they and them over him. So, actually, the American Dialect Society called they its word, their word, I guess, of the year back in 2015. So this has been kind of a progression up to this point.
So the other ones, then we go down the list, then we get crawdad. That was one of the impeach. There, impeach doesn't surprise me. Crawdad.
Yeah, crawdad was a reference to a best-selling novel called Where the Crawdads Sing.
Oh, so it's not the exactly delicious seafood dish.
I like, I don't know if you saw this one, the, D-H-E.
That
for you Ohio State Buckeye fans, you'll know that
right
earlier this year they wanted to trademark the Ohio State University, and they lost. At least for now, they cannot just trademark the word the.
All right, Ryan Burrow, I know you have to run off to another story, so thanks for checking in with
all
the
right
word of the year, they, T-H-E-Y.
Take care.
Thanks, Ryan. Ryan's colleague, Jim Ryan from ABC, is joining us now. One city is going well beyond the red light cameras and introducing something new, or potentially introducing. I don't think it's quite passed yet. Jim, tell us what they're doing.
It's drawn a lot of controversy and criticism. And this is all happening in Montgomery County, Maryland. A council member there, a county council member, wants the Maryland General Assembly to pass a bill that would install roadside cameras, not to catch people running red lights or speeding, but to catch them engaged in distracted driving, looking down at their phones, texting, you know, doing something in the front seat that they shouldn't be doing other than driving. So, there is a push now in the legislature there in Maryland to have something like this done, but it's attracting a lot of attention, a lot of critics who say that there's a matter of privacy here that is compromised by this kind of thing.
Yeah, I saw AAA was one of the first, and I was a little surprised by this because I know they're all about safe driving and safety on the roads, and they're a regular contributor here, when, especially at holiday time when the roads get busy, about talking about, you know, distracted driving and not to do it. But they don't seem to really like, that organization doesn't seem to really like this plan.
Yeah, it was surprising that AAA was opposed to this, or was questioning it at least. And I think that they're thinking along the same lines, that there are privacy issues. There's enforcement complication that comes along with this. It's similar to the red light camera system. The video that's taken by an automatic camera, it's capturing you in your car, would be reviewed by a human before any tickets are written. But once that human determines that, in fact, you were looking down at your phone or doing something other than driving, then, yes, there could be a ticket, a stiff ticket, $500 in some cases.
Even looking down at your phone, just looking down.
Right.
That is a little, it just sounds a little extreme to me. Just, I mean, I know you're not supposed to do it, but, I mean, think about a rideshare driver, for instance. They're constantly looking down. But is that kind of what they're trying to get here? What's happening?
That's right. Or let's say you're looking down, you know, your kid is sitting in the passenger seat or something, or you look down, glance down to change the radio station, and that's the moment that you're captured on video, and then you look up again. But this is going to be a really complicated one. I suspect that it'll be sort of parsed out before it makes its way all the way into the Maryland General Assembly, but the push already is on. For whatever reason, Maryland has had a real problem with distracted driving fatalities. They've had high numbers here in the last couple of years. And out of frustration, one of the Montgomery County Council members, Tom Hucker, says that something's got to be done, and he's certainly willing to endorse this sort of plan, Anna.
Yeah, more residents die in road collisions than in homicides in that particular county, and they say distracted driving is the number one reason why those happen. That's what they suspect. I know they've done studies, too, to show that distracted driving is becoming a larger and larger problem, at least in terms of maybe how we're noticing it. The AAA did do a survey. 66% of people said they notice more drivers distracted by their devices, phones or otherwise, on the road now than 2 years ago. So just in two short years, 66% of people say they see more people doing it. So I guess there's an increase in this kind of activity.
Well, it sure seems to be. I mean, it's rare for, you know, if you're driving down the highway and the car in front of you starts swerving, the assumption used to be, well, that person's drunk or falling asleep. If you pull alongside, I think chances are you're going to see that person playing with a phone or texting or doing something else, even checking the GPS.
That's, you know, it's interesting, though. I hope they don't come here. We've had so many problems. I don't know if you follow the Chicago or Illinois area. We've had so many problems with those red light cameras and the issues.
Oh, yeah.
We've had corruption issues. We've had fraud. We've had payoffs. We have. I mean, I just they never see. They were initially all about safety. That was, again, the push. And then they ended up, of course, being about revenue. But it was more than that here. I mean, we had an investigative team show in, I think it was ABC7, that showed how they had shorter green lights in order to rack up millions in fines. That they actually increased some of the collisions in the intersections where they were hoping to prevent them. They said T-bones decreased, rear-end collisions increased. And in the end, they ended up getting people mostly who were doing rolling right turns on red lights. It really didn't fulfill that safety promise that they set out to do in the first place. Now, maybe this is different.
Well, right. They're modeling after something that's happened in Australia. Australia has a system like this, and they have a mechanism for, trying to catch people engaged in distracted driving. I think the problem with red light cameras, and in city after city, state after state, in fact, they've been taken down altogether because of the concerns you're talking about the safety of them or about the payoffs or corruption.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem with that was that once you involved, and I assume that it was the same in Chicago, that you have a private company that is collecting the money and monitoring and running these things, acting almost like an ad hoc police agency.
Right.
So when they send you a fine, they send you a ticket, and here in Texas it's $75. And what's the consequence if you don't send them $75? There really isn't one.
Yeah. Well, Jim Ryan, we really appreciate you weighing in on this. I don't think this is going to be very popular with drivers, but we'll see what happens in Maryland, and maybe they start it, maybe it goes away. We'll see. But thank you for letting us know more about this plan. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Anna. Bye.
Bye-bye. 847, every car now has a screen on the dash. Talk about distractions, swiping for radio stations, GPS, answering a call, you name it. 616, I've seen people driving with their cell phone right in front of their face. So those would be a slam dunk in this situation. That's absolutely true. I guess those are the people you hope that they might catch, the egregious people kind of just texting right in front of their face. But I just worry that this would lead to anybody glancing at their phone or, as you point out, the screen right there in front of your face, which I think many of us have done. I'm a semi-truck driver. I drive here in the city. I see a lot of people texting and driving at 65 plus miles an hour. These people need to be caught. They're a danger to me and everyone else on the road. So I hope we get those cameras here in Illinois. That's someone who's saying they hope that we actually do. So thank you for the weighing in on that. We're going to be back with more here on WGN Radio in a moment. G. Suki is sitting by.
Yes.
Taking a seat, I should say, here in the studio.
I am back.
As we're about to talk about trending topics. But first, I want to get to a couple more texts about the things people have seen with distracted driving. I am surprised by some of these, and I've seen a lot on the roads too. But 773, I saw a lady grading papers in her car while driving. What? She's got her whole office in front of her on her dashboard.
Was the giveaway perhaps a red ink pen, right, and a giant F or something, a C minus,
or those circled little stickers that say "Great job"?
Oh no, you!
I miss those.
We both got
those
because we were great students.
I was pretty good student at Lane Tech. I really was, actually better in grade school. Let's see. Keith says, as a licensed professional chauffeur and passenger bus operator, excuse me, I hope they expand the scope of those cameras to include pedestrians in crosswalks. That's the other thing. They're not always minding their way, and that could be you dart out into traffic.
It's true, and it happens a lot, especially on Michigan Avenue, and you know, because there's a lot of tourists, and they may be well intentioned, it may not be purposeful, but mm-hmm. that can really screw up the traffic
yes.
as well.
Now, speaking of traffic and professional drivers or semi-professional drivers, we always talk about the passengers and the Ubers and the problems that we have. That comes up a lot, I think.
Yes.
I think that's fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have in trending topics right now an Uber driver. who says, you know what? You have no idea what we deal with. Can you imagine what we deal with? Picking up the drunk people after the parties and all the other kinds of things. He said, I posted this video. He's an Uber driver. He filmed the passengers. I hope that was okay and legal. Swearing at him as he refuses to let them connect to his Bluetooth. Calls one of them out for smoking a weed pen. And then tries to get him out of his vehicle. Well, there's actually audio from this video we have for you.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, Uber for two people? Okay.
Smells good.
Thank you, man.
Sorry,
thank you.
I pulled over.
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, I get a ticket, so I'm happy about that.
Is it because your windows are black?
Exactly. Yep. Yep. I saw the cop.
So
I was
wonder
like,
why people do that.
What? Do what?
You
what?
Just don't care.
You just can't have windshield tint.
Yeah, no, you can't have your front windows tinted. You can have the rear ones as dark as you want. The front ones, you can't have any tint on.
Oh,
yeah, and the thing is, I don't live down here. I live where, like, I've never gotten
You're driving
shit, you know?
My old baby. I killed
so,
her.
Yo, badass. Over here now at times, so.
Black ice? I feel
yeah,
it.
Yeah, black
you.
Ice. Yep, yep, yep.
What's this? Are you recording me?
That's a dash cam recording everybody in this car. All right, so just to the your fence.
Do we have XM?
Just saying.
New Jersey? New Jersey is like a one-party state, so as long as I'm quoting.
Did you respond to the XM?
Party.
Yeah, what?
Do we have XM?
No, we do not have XM.
We do not.
Do we have Bluetooth audio?
I think
we do.
I think we get the picture here. It gets worse, actually. We picked it up in the beginning. They started sort of swearing at him and pointing at him, and the guy starts smoking his weed pen. He tells him to not do that. Mm-hmm. He didn't listen.
Well, I take rideshare every day, whether it's Lyft or Uber, and a lot of the drivers do have cameras just for their safety in case maybe the passenger wants to make a claim that something happened that didn't happen. And a lot of drivers don't drive at certain times of the evening because they just don't want to deal with drunk passengers.
It's probably true. You can think about, you know, if you're going to a certain location, mm-hmm. like the bar districts or...
A lot of folks avoid driving after midnight to 2 in the morning when the bars start closing or people... I mean, the bars don't close till 2 or after on the weekends, but when people start leaving the bars.
Yeah, you wonder. And then I always hear drivers tell me, well, I can't deal with that. I don't go to that area because it's like all the bar people letting out at midnight, but I'll drop them off at like 7 or 8. I'm just not picking them up.
It's a service, but you're going into somebody's personal vehicle. You have to be nice. You have to use your manners.
Yeah, we hear about the other way, and I just thought that was very interesting to hear this guy. And if you see it too, you can tell he's looking so uncomfortable and he's sort of cowering into his seat, and they're all sort of on him.
Two sides of the story.
Here's what's weird. The customers, because you know how you get a rating mm-hmm. as a customer and a driver.
You do.
These customers had 4.56 rating out of 5.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people that won't pick up people when they see that their rating is low.
Yeah.
On both ways.
Both sides. Yeah, you might cancel a driver if mm-hmm. their rating is low. Really low. Mm-hmm. But that could have been because the person who called for the Uber might have had the best rating, but then everybody was together.
The thing is, just behave yourself.
I feel sorry for him.
It's somebody's personal vehicle that they're using to get around in their daily life and transport their family.
Do you ever have bad experiences?
I have a lot.
Here, since you take it every day.
I do. I take it every day. I do have a lot of bad experiences, but I have a lot
What's
of positive
What's a bad experience
ones.
Like without describing exactly, but just what do you... What
just
do you...
bad ones would be very distracted driving. I had a driver once, they were watching video on the...
That's exactly what we're just talking about.
They were on, it was on their dash and they were watching it. You know, had little vent holders that'll hold that.
Yeah.
Mostly for me, I have a severe...
Wait, they were watching a video of like a movie or something?
A movie. It was just going. I don't know if they were just, it was just on. It just happened to be on and they weren't watching it, you know, completely. But for me, you know what my biggest pet peeve is? It's not completely the driver's fault. Is that I have developed an allergy to those vent air car mm-hmm. fresheners.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll have 4 of them in. And I will request very kindly, please, do you mind, you know, taking them out because I'm allergic to them. I will have a reaction. And I've had a few that get offended. And then I even had one kick me out of their car.
Oh, did you just leave? Okay.
But mostly when the interaction is great, it's fabulous. It's the most wonderful way to meet people,
mm-hmm.
all types of people. And I talk to them about everything from politics to what's going on in their personal life. And it's a really great way to get a sense of the
people the outside city, your own
suburbs,
your own network.
Because you don't talk on the train, you don't talk on the bus, but you talk in an Uber and a Lyft.
That's so true. And you can have a good conversation, too. I have as well. Also trending, we want to talk about Roxette star Marie Fredriksson dies at age 61 after a 17-year battle with brain cancer. And you know, you'll know her music. We have a little taste here of it. Yeah, Must Have Been Love, another one of her hits. She, she was feeling healthy and no longer required treatment in 2005, so she thought she was out of the woods, and yet that happened. But definitely someone who will be missed in her music as well. We have 10 of the most memorable moments from the past decade. You know how it's that time of year when usually you hear end of year things?
You start reflecting on what happened in the year.
But this is end of the decade.
Oh,
you know, think about that for a second. Think about that.
Oh, now you just made me even more nostalgic, Anna.
Looking
back. I don't
know
whether to cry or laugh or what.
There's a lot to think about when you think about your life in terms of a decade.
I know. Have I learned from my mistakes? Where has it gone? What have I done?
Top 10, according to this magazine, I got to find out the source from our producer, The Wedding of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, 2011.
Oh, yes. I do remember that. I remember watching it.
Remember the baby parties even here after they had their baby and the wedding parties that were here? And it's so weird how that excitement extended to the U.S. in the way it did.
Right.
In the way it did.
Because it was like, didn't we fight to gain independence from having a king and queen? But now we're obsessed with the royal family.
I think it was the Downton Abbey brought everybody back to this. And the Crown and all these, I don't know, these shows that talk about the British things. A Queen's Diamond Jubilee was also on it. I'm surprised by that. And so there's like the birth of the prince and that kind of. Why a lot of these seem to be.
It's all about
focused on the Meghan effect.
The British royals.
The British royals. Are you into the royals?
I'm not really. I mean, I was excited about Meghan, but now I feel like the tabloids are really going after her.
Yeah, you start feeling sorry for her. I really do.
I feel sorry for her. I feel sorry for the brothers as well.
This is Harper's Bazaar, 10 most memorable moments from the past decade.
Oh, you know what? But I feel like Harper's Bazaar is obsessed with the royals in general.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. They feature them on the cover, things like that. So they talk about how they all lead to the fashion going out of, you know, out of everyone buys everything that they wear to the fact
that. Especially if it's an affordable item. If it's something that was purchased from Zara, I know the Duchess wears a lot. And if it's from Zara, it sells out.
Then the other thing here, trending right now, is what karaoke crimes make you cringe? Is there a certain song you just can't bear it? As soon as someone gets up there to start singing it, you're like, oh no.
People are going to get mad
at
me.
Here we go. What's yours?
Everyone is going to be mad at me, but it makes me cringe when it's Sweet Caroline.
I love Sweet Caroline.
I know. I love it too, and I can sing it, and I love it.
I was
but
just at a Wrigleyville bar for a charity event this weekend, and they played it, and everybody sings. You all get in the spirit. It's
I
the
know,
only song you can get the whole crowd.
This is my point, Anna, and I know people will be mad at me, but it's you end up hearing it throughout the night multiple times at every karaoke bar. Have you ever been at a karaoke bar where it hasn't been sung?
No, I have not. In fact, that's my song, so that's why.
You're the culprit.
I'm the reason, but it's great for people who cannot sing because you only have to do like a line or two and then the bar's singing with you.
Listen, I'm going so good. Mm-hmm. I am as well, but I kind of hate myself at the same time.
Well, here at the list here, they have Bohemian Rhapsody is one. That's a hard one to sing.
That's a really hard one.
I would never attempt that one, ever.
No.
Ever.
I love when people that can't sing karaoke. To me, that is the point of going to karaoke because I love it.
Went to this one bar where they had the guys who were part of a off-Broadway act here who were singing karaoke, and as soon as they finished, no one wanted to go up and sing anything because they were like, oh my gosh.
They were so
that is so good. All right, we're going to chat with Rokan coming up here, see what's coming up on his show here on WGN. Stay with us, and I should mention as well, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.